The right religious use of everything and every talent is the indispensable duty of every being that is capable of knowing right and wrong. For the reason why we are to do anything as unto God and with regard to our duty and relation to Him is the same reason why we are to do everything as unto God and with regard to our duty and relation to Him. That which is a reason for our being wise and holy in the discharge of all our business is the same reason for our being wise and holy in the use of all our money. As we have always the same natures and are everywhere the servants of the same God, as every place is equally full of His presence and everything is equally His gift, so we must always act according to the reason of our nature. We must do everything as the servants of God. We must live in every place as in His presence. We must use everything as that ought to be used which belongs to God. Either this piety and wisdom and devotion is to go through every way of life and to extend to the use of everything, or it is to go through no part of life. If we might forget ourselves or forget God, if we might disregard our reason and live by humor and fancy in anything, or at any time, or in any place, it would be as lawful to do the same in everything, at every time, and every place. If, therefore, some people fancy that they must be grave and solemn at church, but may be silly and frantic at home, that they must live by some rule on Sunday, but may spend other days by chance, that they must have some times of prayer, but may waste the rest of their time as they please, that they must give some money to charity, but may squander away the rest as they have a mind, such people have not enough considered the nature of religion or the true reasons of piety. For he that upon principles of reason can tell why it is good to be wise and heavenly minded at church, can tell that it is always desirable to have the same tempers in all other places. He that truly knows why he should spend any time well, knows that it is never allowable to throw any time away. He that rightly understands the reasonableness and excellency of charity, will know that it can never be excusable to waste any of our money in pride and folly, or in any needless expense. For every argument that shows the wisdom and excellency of charity proves the wisdom of spending all our fortune well. Every argument that proves the wisdom and reasonableness of having times of prayer shows the wisdom and reasonableness of losing none of our time. If anyone could show that we need not always act as in the divine presence, that we need not consider and use everything as the gift of God, that we need not always live by reason and make religion the rule of all our actions, the same arguments would show that we need never act as in the presence of God, nor make religion and reason the measure of any of our actions. If, therefore, we are to live unto God at any time or in any place, we are to live unto Him at all times and in all places. If we are to use anything as the gift of God, we are to use everything as His gift. If we are to do anything by strict rules of reason and piety, we are to do everything in the same manner. Because reason and wisdom and piety are as much the best things at all times and in all places as they are the best things at any time or in any place. If it is our glory and happiness to have a rational nature, that is endued with wisdom and reason, that is capable of imitating the divine nature, then it must be our glory and happiness to improve our reason and wisdom, to act up to the excellency of our rational nature, and to imitate God in all our actions, to the utmost of our power. They, therefore, who confine religion to times and places, and some little rules of retirement, who think that it is being too strict and rigid to introduce religion into common life and make it give laws to all their actions and ways of living, they who think thus not only mistake, but they mistake the whole nature of religion. For surely they mistake the whole nature of religion who can think any part of their life is made more easy for being free from it. They may well be said to mistake the whole nature of wisdom, who do not think it desirable to be always wise. He has not learnt the nature of piety, who thinks it too much to be pious in all his actions. He does not sufficiently understand what reason is, who does not earnestly desire to live in everything according to it. If we had a religion that consisted in absurd superstitions, that had no regard to the perfection of our nature, people might well be glad to have some part of their life excused from it. But as the religion of the gospel is only the refinement and exaltation of our best faculties, as it only requires a life of the highest reason, as it only requires us to use this world as in reason it ought to be used, to live in such tempers as are the glory of intelligent beings, to walk in such wisdom as exalts our nature, and to practice such piety as will raise us to God, who can think it grievous to live always in the spirit of such a religion, to have every part of his life full of it, but he that would think it much more grievous to be as the angels of God in heaven? Farther, as God is one and the same being, always acting like himself and suitably to his own nature, so it is the duty of every being that he has created to live according to the nature that he has given it, and always to act like itself. It is therefore an immutable law of God that all rational beings should act reasonably in all their actions, not at this time or in that place or upon this occasion, or in the use of some particular thing, but at all times, in all places, on all occasions, and in the use of all things. This is a law that is as unchangeable as God and can no more cease to be than God can cease to be a God of wisdom and order. When, therefore, any being that is endued with reason does an unreasonable thing at any time, or in any place, or in the use of anything, it sins against the great law of its nature, abuses itself, and sins against God, the author of that nature. They, therefore, who plead with four indulgences and vanities, for any foolish fashions, customs, and humors of the world, for the misuse of our time or money, plead for a rebellion against our nature, for a rebellion against God, who has given us reason for no other end than to make it the rule and measure of all our ways of life. When, therefore, you are guilty of any folly or extravagance, or indulge any vain temper, do not consider it as a small matter, because it may seem so if compared to some other sins. But consider it as it is acting contrary to your nature, and then you will see that there is nothing small that is unreasonable, because all unreasonable ways are contrary to the nature of all rational beings, whether men or angels, neither of which can be any longer agreeable to God than so far as they act according to the reason and excellence of their nature. The infirmities of human life make such food and raiment necessary for us, as angels do not want, but then it is no more allowable for us to turn these necessities into follies and indulge ourselves in the luxury of food or the vanities of dress than it is allowable for angels to act below the dignity of their proper state. For a reasonable life and a wise use of our proper condition is as much the duty of all men as it is the duty of all angels and intelligent beings. These are not speculative flights or imaginary notions, but are plain and undeniable laws that are founded in the nature of rational beings, who as such are obliged to live by reason and glorify God by a continual right use of their several talents and faculties. So that though men are not angels, yet they may know for what ends and by what rules men are to live and act, by considering the state and perfection of angels. Our blessed Savior has plainly turned our thoughts this way by making this petition a constant part of all our prayers. Thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. A plain proof that the obedience of men is to imitate the obedience of angels, and that rational beings on earth are to live unto God, as rational beings in heaven live unto him. When, therefore, you would represent to your mind how Christians ought to live unto God, and in what degrees of wisdom and holiness they ought to use the things of this life. You must not look at the world, but you must look up to God and the society of angels, and think what wisdom and holiness is fit to prepare you for such a state of glory. You must look to all the highest precepts of the gospel. You must examine yourself by the Spirit of Christ. You must think how the wisest men in the world have lived. You must think how departed souls would live if they were again to act the short part of human life. You must think what degrees of wisdom and holiness you will wish for when you are leaving the world. Now this is not overstraining the matter or proposing to ourselves any needless perfection. It is but barely complying with the apostle's advice, where he says, "Finally, brethren, whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are just, whatsoever things are pure, whatsoever things are of good report, if there be any virtue, if there be any praise, think on these things." Philippians 4:8. For no one can come near the doctrine of this passage, but he that proposes to himself to do everything in this life as the servant of God, to live by reason in everything that he does, and to make the wisdom and holiness of the gospel the rule and measure of his desiring and using every gift of God. Chapter 6, containing the great obligations and the great advantages of making a wise and religious use of our estates and fortunes. As the holiness of Christianity consecrates all states and employments of life unto God, as it requires us to aspire after an universal obedience, doing and using everything as the servants of God, so are we more specially obliged to observe this religious exactness in the use of our estates and fortunes. The reason of this would appear very plain, if we were only to consider that our estate is as much the gift of God as our eyes or our hands, and is no more to be buried or thrown away at pleasure than we are to put out our eyes or throw away our limbs as we please. But besides this consideration, there are several other great and important reasons why we should be religiously exact in the use of our estates. First, because the manner of using our money or spending our estate enters so far into the business of every day and makes so great a part of our common life that our common life must be much of the same nature as our common way of spending our estate. If reason and religion govern us in this, then reason and religion have got great hold of us. But if humor, pride, and fancy are the measures of our spending our estate, then humor, pride, and fancy will have the direction of the greatest part of our life. Secondly, another great reason for devoting all our estate to right uses is this. Because it is capable of being used to the most excellent purposes, and is so great a means of doing good. If we waste it, we do not waste a trifle. That signifies little. But we waste that which might be made as eyes to the blind, as a husband to the widow, as a father to the orphan. We waste that which not only enables us to minister worldly comforts to those that are in distress, but that which might purchase for ourselves everlasting treasures in heaven. So that if we part with our money in foolish ways, we part with a great power of comforting our fellow creatures and of making ourselves forever blessed. If there be nothing so glorious as doing good, if there is nothing that makes us so like to God, then nothing can be so glorious in the use of our money as to use it all in works of love and goodness, making ourselves friends and fathers and benefactors to all our fellow creatures, imitating the divine love and turning all our power into acts of generosity, care, and kindness to such as are in need of it. If a man had eyes and hands and feet that he could give to those that wanted them, if he should either lock them up in a chest or please himself with some needless or ridiculous use of them, instead of giving them to his brethren that were blind and lame, should we not justly reckon him an inhuman wretch? If he should rather choose to amuse himself with furnishing his house with those things than to entitle himself to an eternal reward, by giving them to those that wanted eyes and hands, might we not justly reckon him mad? Now money has very much the nature of eyes and feet. If we either lock it up in chests or waste it in needless and ridiculous expenses upon ourselves, whilst the poor and the distressed want it for their necessary uses, if we consume it in the ridiculous ornaments of apparel, whilst others are starving in nakedness, we are not far from the cruelty of him that chooses rather to adorn his house with the hands and eyes than to give them to those that want them. If we choose to indulge ourselves in such expensive enjoyments as have no real use in them, such as satisfy no real want, rather than to entitle ourselves to an eternal reward, by disposing of our money well, we are guilty of his madness, that rather chooses to lock up eyes and hands than to make himself forever blessed by giving them to those that want them. For after we have satisfied our own sober and reasonable wants, all the rest of our money is but like spare eyes or hands. It is something that we cannot keep to ourselves without being foolish in the use of it, something that can only be used well by giving it to those that want it. Thirdly, if we waste our money, we are not only guilty of wasting a talent which God has given us, we are not only guilty of making that useless, which is so powerful a means of doing good, but we do ourselves this further harm, that we turn this useful talent into a powerful means of corrupting ourselves, because so far as it is spent wrong, so far it is spent in support of some wrong temper, in gratifying some vain and unreasonable desires, in conforming to those fashions and pride of the world, which as Christians and reasonable men we are obliged to renounce. As wit and fine parts cannot be trifled away, and only lost, but will expose those that have them into greater follies, if they are not strictly devoted to piety, so money, if it is not used strictly according to reason and religion, can not only be trifled away, but it will betray people into greater follies, and make them live a more silly and extravagant life than they could have done without it. Footnote 14. Exposed into the ire is a usage of the 16th century writers. If, therefore, you do not spend your money in doing good to others, you must spend it to the hurt of yourself. You will act like a man that should refuse to give that as a cordial to a sick friend, though he could not drink it himself without inflaming his blood. For this is the case of superfluous money. If you give it to those that want it, it is a cordial. If you spend it upon yourself in something that you do not want, it only inflames and disorders your mind, and makes you worse than you would be without it. Consider again the forementioned comparison. If the man that would not make a right use of spare eyes and hands should, by continually trying to use them himself, spoil his own eyes and hands, we might justly accuse him of still greater madness. Now this is truly the case of riches spent upon ourselves in vain and needless expenses, in trying to use them where they have no real use, nor we any real want. We only use them to our great hurt, in creating unreasonable desires, in nourishing ill tempers, in indulging our passions, and supporting a worldly vain turn of mind. For high eating and drinking, fine clothes and fine houses, state and equipage, gay pleasures and diversions, do all of them naturally hurt and disorder our hearts. They are the food and nourishment of all the folly and weakness of our nature, and are certain means to make us vain and worldly in our tempers. They are all of them the support of something that ought not to be supported. They are contrary to that sobriety and piety of heart which relishes divine things. They are like so many weights upon our mind that make us less able and less inclined to raise up our thoughts and affections to the things that are above. All that money thus spent is not merely wasted or lost, but it is spent to bad purposes and miserable effects.